ngicela uhambe uyofuna umsebenzi.
Uzoyithola kanjani hlelo khoneni?
Yonke into, impahla, imali.
This adulting thing, hey.
Uhamba imali?
Wizi naga ithloka challenge.
Awuna moto, imali. Kufanele kube nemali phakathi.
Sebenza.
Sebenza. Sebenza.
Yeva mntanam.
Sebenza.
Welcome back to another episode of Sebenza Lives Behind the Hustle. You're joined by Tango and of course Ntokozo. Ntokozo, how are you today?
I am doing so well.
It's been such a long time. Oh, it has, and I'm flourish now. When you come back, I'm like, should I have been gone today?
Hell no. You belong here.
No, I'm glad I'm here today because we have a very interesting topic. We're discussing workplace bullying. And we have the perfect guy to discuss this with. How are you doing, Sikanda?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Great stuff. Now, tell the people a little bit about what you do.
Okay, so usually what I do is I always start off with a personal as well as a professional background. Mm-hmm. So on a more personal level, I grew up in Polokwane, so just outside of Polokwane in a township known as Sisho. Mm-hmm. My mother's from Ramanyaka, which is a township just out of Burgersfort, and I am from a biracial background. So essentially, my mother's a Pedi woman, exclusively Christian family, a working class family, and my father's a Muslim man from a more affluent family. So I grew up with the Pedi side of my family for the first 6-7 years of my life. Mm-hmm. And that's where I learned to speak Pedi. And I actually grew up in that environment. And you can imagine now I had to almost navigate through race, through language, through culture. Religion. So that diverse background is something that I always utilize in my clinical work with patients because I feel like in South Africa, everything's grounded in a specific narrative. It's grounded in a structural, socioeconomic aspect, sociopolitical, sociocultural. So I try and do that sort of appraisal of my patients. From a professional standpoint, I did my undergrad at University of Pretoria. Then I went on to do my honors at Wits, and then I did my master's in Port Elizabeth. Thereafter, I worked for the Gauteng Department of Health at Westkoppies Hospital for a year, and then at Joburg Gen Hospital just up the road for another year. I did my community service there. And since then, I've been more in the private sector while still doing some public work as much as I can. So I'm now based in the Sandton area. I work at a clinical practice there, mindful psychology practice in Morningside, mm-hmm. and a few other clinical settings as well.
Now, before we jump into the topic, I want to bring forward these stats that I came across from the South African Journal of Human Resource Management. Mm-hmm. As of 2012, 31.1% of people have actually come forward to say, hey, I'm a victim of social bullying, I'm workplace bullying.
Yes.
And some of the things that they came up with, I mean, it's a long list of some of the things and how a person can actually be put in the workplace. But it was verbal abuse, social exclusion, and then they were also undermined by the professionals within this workplace.
Yeah.
Now, Sikanda, if we can, what is workplace bullying? How does one best define that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you see, that's one of the tricky aspects of it. Because usually when we think of identifying certain pathologies or detrimental aspects in society, there's usually quite clear cut, especially in a clinical setting. You know, you think of certain pathologies like major depressive disorder, you think of personality disorders and whatever. It's very well delineated. Mm-hmm. Versus with workplace bullying, there's no fixed definition. And I think that's because it's so multifaceted and it manifests in so many different ways. If I'm to offer one way that I conceptualize it, I would say it usually carries a persistent and repetitive pattern of mistreatment against a fellow employee. And in that regard, not only does it do that, but it's also at an intensity that causes significant psychological, emotional, and physical distress in the employee. Mm. So I think that's the way to identify it. More often than not, there's a pattern. Mm. More often than not, it's repetitive. More often than not, also it intensifies with time, and it causes distress in multiple domains of functioning: physical, psychological, emotional. And one other pattern that's often been identified is it more often than not manifests in a hierarchical structure in which those in a higher position in the workplace setting bully the ones in a more subordinate level. Mm. It's not always the case, but more often than not, that has been noted.
But what makes people to become like bullies, you know? Like, how does it start? Because now we are at a workplace. I know, like, when you're in school, of course, we have those kind of bullies.
But the stereotype that's where you might commonly find it.
Found. But now, I mean, we're adults. You know, you've gone to university and stuff like that. This is a place where old people are here, yeah, and
you expect more.
You expect more, exactly, for people to be like more professional. But so how but do people become bullies?
See, the problem is we carry our narratives with us throughout our lives. And what may have started off in childhood manifests later on. And in that regard, I think it can stem, it's so multifaceted. It can stem maybe from deficiencies in a younger age. So perhaps lack of unconditional positive regard, lack of unconditional love, which then there's a need to manifest that with almost trying to seek out validation by asserting power. Almost a need to then say, hey, if I can show my dominance here, if I can show my sense of competence by imposing that on others, I kind of fill that void. So, you know, as I said, if there's no specific way of defining it, I more often than not try to stay away from what personality profile would fit a workplace bully. Because by doing that, we miss out on some of the gaps. We miss out on how certain individuals that you wouldn't expect it from do it. And I think that comes with as quite a strong risk of trying to profile that, because then you miss out on the outliers. So there's multiple aspects to it.
Now, as much as we shouldn't sort of almost diagnose that yes, person is truly a bully, how does one best identify, am I being bullied, or is someone treating me in a way they shouldn't treat me in a workplace? How does one differentiate? Because I'm thinking now, and I'm glad you mentioned cultures and our backgrounds. Growing up, our parents, or I know my mom for one, was always very, if someone in the workplace is treating you ill, suck it up. Yeah. That's your boss, you know. You gotta keep it going. You gotta make that money.
Gotta put food on the table.
So and how now, do you best differentiate that?
Because now this makes me wonder, Tango, is it the people that were bullied at a younger age are now the ones that are becoming now the bullies? Which again, now, you know, I'm much older. I'm no more going to get bullied by someone else. Oh, what happens?
That's one explanation, but it could be so many other things as well. I guess the question that you are unpacking is, how do you then navigate through what is being bullied?
Yeah.
How do you identify that best? And I think, again, going back to the criteria of, is it repetitive? Is it intensifying? Is there a power differential? And also, to be, I think this is something that we can almost take from more an empowerment level, but to be attuned to how I'm feeling in those specific moments. So you know when something's triggering you in some regard. You might not be able to define it perfectly, but you see that perhaps we use the term neurovegetative symptoms, which is sleep, appetite, energy, memory, concentration, libido, excretion, to see, is there any fluctuations there? Is there anything that's not going right? Do I feel these things intensify during the work week? You know, could it be linked to something? And to be able to be attuned to that. To also be attuned to, how much am I being isolated? Because I think the way in which workplace bullying more often than not manifests is through an exclusion of the individual, slowly but surely, where they become isolated and they feel powerless. That's the thing. That there's almost, we remove your proximity to power. Therefore, you feel like you're going at it alone. You suffer in silence. You have no one to back you up. And therefore, it just keeps getting perpetuated. So to almost see, am I being excluded? That's one way you can identify it. Is this a repetitive thing? Do I feel like it's, I feel personally I'm being disrespected? What is the nature of it? And I think being more attuned to that as well can go a long way. But for that to happen, we need to almost harness workplaces that are holistically attuned to that, where we almost have settings that emphasize the value of good employee relations, that emphasize the value of knowing your labor laws, knowing how you're protected, knowing what is appropriate, what is inappropriate. And I think that's one way in which we can be more mindful of when things are going astray.
I definitely like that. I'm also now thinking, you know, does it then affect the way you have relations to other people outside of your office space? Can people who are often victims, and can people who are also perpetrators, tend to take that out in out of the office?
Most certainly. It doesn't happen within a vacuum. And that's the thing. That's another way you can be attuned to it, to see what's happening in your personal life, whether it's intimate romantic relationships, familial relationships, but to pick up on, why do I have this underlying irritability, this frustration, this short fuse? What is happening there? And I think it can more often than not manifest in that way. And even if we look at certain personality structures that I would say you can't always pinpoint in this specific case, but even if you look at, let's use narcissistic personality disorder, for example, the main way that it manifests is there's a feeling of inadequacy, there's a feeling of incompetence stemming from previous lack of validation, previous lack of unconditional positive regard. There's a need then to put up a level of guardedness that doesn't allow for narcissistic injury. And what that then happens and how it manifests is you don't know how to regulate that between defending oneself versus transgressing boundaries and hurting other individuals. So I think it's very important to be attuned to that as well.
So let's say, now I'm just going to give an example. You are being bullied at work, and at home you are the bread and butter, right? Everyone is relying on you. You're trying to maybe tell your boss, or maybe your boss is the one that's bullying you, or whoever. Like, who do you speak to at work, first of all? And then also within your profession, how do you help people who are getting bullied at work to, you know, overcome that?
Can you help when you see someone is perhaps being bullied at work?
I think in a more clinical setting, what happens is if the bullying persists, it stops just being workplace bullying, but it starts becoming other forms of mental difficulties. So it starts off as workplace bullying, but you now start presenting with an anxiety disorder. You start presenting with excessive worrying, a hypervigilance, a sense of restlessness. And then when I see you in a clinical setting, it's now to treat the anxiety aspect to it. But we also want to avoid this revolving door where we treat something acutely, send you back into the same environment, you experience the same thing, and it recurs. So it's so important to work on the symptoms and the pathology that you're presenting with at that time, but to also be devising strategies that when you go back into that environment, you're more resilient, you have better coping resources, you're better able to tackle the situation. Even if you look at it from a major depressive disorder perspective as well, workplace bullying can most certainly result in that. Almost feeling helpless, hopeless, low mood, despondency, motivation drops, all of these things. So I think there's two aspects to it. There's this treating it more in the organizational and company structure, but then there's also the aspect of treating the individual. And I think they need to happen alongside one another.
Something interesting you mentioned there, where, you know, the person might go back into the workplace and then you're putting them back into the cycle because you haven't been able to treat it. Maybe it's the bullying. How common is it that when someone comes for clinical help, they aren't able to apply what perhaps they get?
It's a very tough one. I think you look at corporate South Africa and you look at some of the more structural systemic aspects of it, where we have quite a strong history with regard to race relations, ongoing one with gender, all these dynamics are at play that which inherently cause bias and prejudice and discrimination. So how do we go about then improving the systemic aspects so that when they go back into that environment, we're not asking them to learn how to just live in a very toxic environment, but we're slowly starting to change the environment as well. And I think to do that, what's going to be required is work places in themselves need to start realizing the importance of looking after and nourishing their employees so that they can maximize the workplace setting, efficiency, productivity, and what have you. To not go about it in a punitive, malicious way, but to go about it in a way that really seeks to assist and optimize each person's functioning. And I think what's going to be important there is workplace initiatives such as workshop to identify bias, to talk more about the experiences of different individuals with different narratives from different backgrounds in a specific structure.
I want to jump into different backgrounds, but before we do, let's get a quick ad break going, and we'll be right back.
Racial identity politics, a phrase that has the potential to start an argument in just about any situation. That's why we're starting it first. Let's Start an Argument is a unique and insightful podcast series about the meaning of race to us today. Presented by researcher Cecilia Koch and Doctor of Philosophy Jason Werbeloff, the series aims to spark rational argument and meaningful discussion around this controversial topic. Find Let's Start an Argument now on the Cliff Central app, cliffcentral.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, welcome back, guys. Now, as I said before the break, I cultural backgrounds play a huge part, and you mentioned this earlier. Especially, and I always say South Africa is quite a cocktail of cultures.
Yeah.
How does that play a role in the workplaces we're in and the different people we meet?
I think a massive role, because it results in misunderstanding. It results in miscommunication, misunderstanding, and attributing that to malicious intent, even though it was unintentional. But being unintentional doesn't mean it's excusable. It means it could stem from ignorance. And I think we need to start breaking down those barriers of not being able to connect with different narratives, different backgrounds, different cultures. We need to immerse ourselves in that so that we have more sensitivity to seeing how can we best navigate through this.
How do we do it?
You know, you look at the melting pot hypothesis that we've been trying to utilize in South Africa. It's so tricky because there's still the systemic structural things that bring you down. Yet on the surface level, we're saying we're trying to work together and trying to integrate and what have you. So I think we need to become more transparent about what is actually still simmering underneath. And I think in that regard, you know, you look at Truth and Reconciliation Commission and what have you, and the narratives that came out of there. But I think we still carry a lot of residual anger, a lot of residual frustration with the ongoing inequality, with the ongoing systemic discrimination. So I think we need to start finding ways in which we can express that so it doesn't carry so much repressed, suppressed residual impact. But also that it doesn't trigger individuals in the sense where they become defensive. It's a balancing act. And I think we're still learning how to navigate through that in South Africa.
I was about to ask, do you feel it's getting somewhere in terms of the South African corporate space?
I think there's, you know, I recently went to an event where the topic of discussion was how to navigate through corporate South Africa as a person of color. And I think we're slowly creating those platforms to discuss our experiences and learn from one another on how we navigated through that. And I think that is our best bet of becoming more aware, realizing we're not going at it alone, normalizing the experience, and then devising strategies and seeing what works for us. If it doesn't, let's try this. If it doesn't, let's try this. So I think sometimes it feels like one step forward, two steps back, but other times I think we are able to make better strides at it. And it's something that we just need to continuously work at.
And how can like companies help like the employees to get help, like in terms of when they are bullied at work? Because I mean, companies also need to play a role, right?
Yeah.
You cannot like do it alone at all times, because I mean, it does get expensive if you don't have medical aids and all those things. So how would you encourage companies to get involved and make sure that they do know that they are employees that are getting bullied?
I would say, you know, I often draw reference from Simon Sinek, who often speaks about the distinction between leaders and managers. Whereas, you know, from a leader perspective, the goal is to almost harness your ability to serve as your own leader rather than just being managed and micromanaged. So I think there needs to be more sensitivity towards let's empower, and to do that, let's implement workplace policies that really prioritize employee wellness. Not that we just have it to be compliant, but to actually utilize it, get it out there, emphasize its importance, and continue doing things like that.
Now, before we almost conclude this, I want to think for the taboo out there, the young corporate person or man or woman who probably doesn't even realize this is workplace bullying. And how do they solve this problem? What advice can you give in terms
without getting fired?
Without getting fired.
I would say, first and foremost, identify what has been happening, track it, record keeping. I think there needs to be sound record keeping of this was this transgression on this day. This is how it manifested. This is how it played out. What was my responsibility? What was this person's responsibility? You're going to need that record keeping should you want to escalate things. Mm-hmm. So then also to be able to identify how much can this be an HR matter? Mm. How much do I need to use other legislative powers, the CCMA?
Within the company, yeah.
Oh, yeah, even externally, you know, CCMA, unions, all these other platforms that one could utilize. So I think it needs more awareness of what are your rights and what is the best way of navigating through that. Starting off by saying, okay, and it will depend. It's going to have to be tailored for you. So in some settings, maybe going to speak to the individual concerned and say, hey, I don't appreciate this aspect. Mm. I understand my responsibility. I understand your responsibility. Mm. Can we work at this together? If that doesn't work, take it to the next level. Take it to HR then. If that you're not getting anywhere there, go to the CCMA. So just to utilize that awareness of what are the different structures that I could utilize. And I think one also very interesting way of navigating through it, which is less legislative, is to realize the power differentials that come into place when there's workplace bullying.
Mm.
And I think what could be done is to utilize other power structures in the organization. Maybe do work with other team leaders or other individuals higher up in the hierarchical system so that they can pick up on you being mistreated and say, hey, what's happening here? And be able to call in. Because as I said, one of the ways in which it manifests is there's an exclusion where you feel alone. You don't feel like you have any link to some of the power structures. So work in different projects, work on different projects and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Be able to utilize other leadership individuals in the organization so that you have some collective force with you and you're not going at it alone.
Never go at it alone. Mm. I like that. Thank you so much again, Sikanda. I think
we've
learned a lot today. I mean, we could unravel this for days, honestly. But we're going to cut it right here. Make sure to follow us on @SowetanLive on Twitter and @SowetanLive on Instagram as well. And yeah, keep us updated on what you guys think we should do next and keep us informed.